If it seems to you that more people are developing life-threatening food allergies, you're right. There's no definitive explanation, but there's a few theories about why. My guest, Dr. Hugh Sampson, is the president of the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. He's a professor of pediatrics at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, where he directs the Jaffe Food Allergy Institute. Dr. Sampson, welcome to Fresh Air. What are some of the foods most likely to cause an allergic reaction?
Depending on the age of the individual, in very young children, the most common foods causing allergic reactions are milk, egg, and peanut. Less so things such as soy, wheat, fish, and shellfish. In older individuals and adults, the most common foods are peanuts, tree nuts, fish, and various shellfish.
So what causes an allergic reaction in the first place? Why do our bodies sometimes respond to food as if they're some kind of toxic?
Well, this is part of the immune system protective response. At a time when we had a great deal of difficulty with things such as parasites and worms, this form of the immune system was very effective in trying to rid us of those various pathogens. Now we don't confront those as often, and there seems to be some missignaling on the part of the immune system whereby part of the immune system will inadvertently or incorrectly react against specific foods.
If our immune system is built the way it was to deal with parasites, why is it having a different response when it reacts to a food that it considers an enemy?
Part of it may be related to the way we program our immune system. And one of the theories out there as to why we're seeing more in the way of allergy is the so-called hygiene hypothesis. We know that the immune system gets programmed by bacteria that enters our gastrointestinal tract and on our skin shortly after birth. And also, there are effects of various infections that we have. And the theory is that we're not getting the appropriate signals, and that's leading to this misprogramming in certain individuals that lead to the allergic reactions.
Okay, so there's different theories about why so many people have allergic reactions to food now. You just started describing one of them, which is that we're not exposed to the same amount of pathogens as we used to be?
Correct.
And that's because of what, antibiotics and high-strength cleansers and things like that?
Better sanitation, more frequent use of antibiotics, better preservation of food products. A number of things that we've done that have very positive health benefits but may have, led to this inadvertent consequence.
So our immune system, which would have learned how to react to these genuine pathogens, isn't exposed to those pathogens that much, and so it freaks out with certain foods?
Yes, that's generally the theory.
Did I put that scientifically enough for you?
That's perfect.
So does that explain why the number of food allergies seems to be increasing?
Well, I'm not sure it does in total, and there are probably a number of different theories. So, for example, if we look at the prevalence of peanut allergy in our country, Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, it's the highest in the world. You go to areas of China where the consumption of peanut is really the same per capita, and you see virtually no peanut allergy. Similarly, in other countries in Africa, for example, peanut products are introduced very early. They're ingested quite frequently, and they see very little in the way of peanut allergy. Some of that may have to do with the way we prepare the foods that we eat. So with the case of peanut, in the U.S. and the other countries I mentioned, we generally consume them as in a dry roasted form. And this high heat of dry roasting actually brings about some changes, something called a Maillard reaction, in the peanut protein that actually makes it more allergenic or more likely to cause allergic reactions. Whereas in other countries, in Africa and China, for example, they will much more frequently boil it, so you don't get that same change. We actually have developed a mouse model of peanut anaphylaxis whereby we can sensitize a mouse to experience a similar kind of reaction if they were to ingest peanut. But if we try to do it with the boiled peanut as opposed to the dry roasted, we really can't get much of a response. So that may have something to do with the way we prepare the foods. It may also have something to do with when we introduce foods. So for example, there has been a study looking at the prevalence of peanut allergy in Israel. And in that study, it was noted that the prevalence was about one-tenth of what you saw in children in Hebrew school in London. And one of the things that is very different there is that in Israel, they use a weaning food or a food that they first give to a baby called bamba. And this bamba contains peanut. And it may be that actually, rather than trying to restrict exposure to things such as peanut, which has, you know, been more of a common practice in our country, that perhaps giving large amounts early on may induce something called high-dose tolerance or may actually help prevent it. So this is another thing that is being looked into, and there actually is a very large study going on in London right now addressing this particular issue.
I know you've done some studying of Chinese medicine and Chinese herbs. What have you learned from Chinese medicine about food sensitivities and food allergies?
A lot of this work has been done by Dr. Xiumin Li, who is in our group and who actually came to Mount Sinai with me from Hopkins when I came about 10 years ago. Interestingly, there is nothing about food allergy in the books of traditional Chinese medicine. So she, through a lot of reading and such, came up with some formulations that she thought potentially would be effective. So she combined things related that were related to allergy and also related to some kinds of responses in the gastrointestinal tract, and used these formulations in our mouse model of peanut anaphylaxis, and was able to show that it completely blocked the allergic response that we were seeing. We subsequently done some work trying to understand what they actually do, and they have direct effects on the immune system, turning down some of the signals that promote this allergic reactivity. So we don't fully understand what they're doing, but they're very impressive in these animal models. And now we do have approval from the FDA and have a study that has been started in humans looking at the possibility that this may be an effective way to treat food allergy.
I think it's kind of exciting that the medical field is looking into Chinese herbs as a way of treating food allergies.
We have to certainly keep an open mind, and I'm always open for anything that might be useful in treating food allergy. I've been dealing with it for about 25 years, and you know, up till this point, about the only thing we could tell our patients was you had to avoid foods and try to teach them what dangerous situations were, and people continue to make mistakes. Food allergy is still the leading cause of anaphylaxis.
Which is what?
Anaphylaxis is a severe allergic reaction in which many of the, again, what I'll call target organs, so your respiratory tract, like your nasal passages, your throat, your lungs, your gastrointestinal tract, your skin, and even your cardiovascular system, your heart and your blood pressure can all be affected at one time. And this is something that can happen very rapidly and lead to death. And in this country, as I say, it is the single leading cause of these kinds of reactions that are treated in emergency departments in the U.S. Various estimates would put that in the range of 125,000 visits to emergency rooms in the U.S. This is based on a recent study published by one of the FDA groups, and then also leading to about or over 3,000 hospitalizations and possibly from other studies 100 to 150 deaths per year. So, fairly serious problem.
How reliable are food labels in packaged products now in terms of telling you if there is, soy or nuts or, mm-hmm. or gluten or egg, you know, whatever the offending product is? Because sometimes there's just like traces of it. It's not like it's an egg product per se.
Right. With the new food labeling law that went into effect about 2 years ago now, the labeling has become much better and is much clearer. So, for example, a number of years ago, they could have on the label sodium caseinate, and this is on something that's called a non-dairy creamer, and you would think, well, there's no milk, but casein or caseinate is milk protein, and it's actually the major milk protein. Today, if you put something like that in there, it has to have milk. So the eight foods that are most often responsible for food allergic reactions, so milk, egg, wheat, soy, peanut, various tree nuts, fish, shellfish, all have to be specified on the ingredient label that they are contained in this particular food. I think one of the problems we're getting into is there's never really been sufficient studies to know, can there be any trace at all of a particular food within a product and have it still be safe? Because we know from doing these various food challenges that often people will tolerate very low amounts of food. And what's happened is if the company is not completely sure that there's we'll talk about peanut, that there's no peanut at all in there, they will put may contain traces of peanut or, you know, made in a plant that contains or that handles peanut. And what's happened is many foods that people had been eating without any difficulty all of a sudden have this warning label on it, and now their diets are even more restricted. So this is something that really needs to be looked at carefully in order to help us give people the best possible diet.
Are there issues that pregnant women or mothers who are breastfeeding should keep in mind that might increase or decrease their child's tolerance to food?
Yeah, this is you've really hit on one of the new hot areas that's become very controversial. In the past, we thought we knew what to do, which was we were recommending that people delay the introduction of some of these major allergens. But then stepping back and looking at what's happened with the prevalence of food allergy, which is that it's increasing, and looking at the evidence that we have to support the idea that people should restrict their foods, the evidence doesn't support that as a valid way to go. And the American Academy of Pediatrics just came out in January with new guidelines basically saying that we don't have sufficient evidence to tell either pregnant mothers or mothers who are breastfeeding that there's a great advantage to trying to restrict any of these major allergens. If we look at what studies are out there, there are studies that really suggest either approach, either there's a little bit of data, but it's not in any way conclusive, and there's conflicting data to suggest that if you restrict it, you may prevent some of these allergies. But there's also some evidence out there, and experience in Israel with the early introduction of Bomba is one such case where it's suggesting that maybe we should be introducing these foods earlier in larger amounts. So right now, we really don't have good evidence-based data to tell us what is the best way mothers should go. And so I can tell you in my clinic, basically, I explain to the mothers that we don't have good data and that they can really do what they're most comfortable with and should in no way ever feel guilty about the outcome because we can't tell them at the moment what is the best way to do it.
Let me ask you, there's a lot of reactions some people get to food that I'm not sure you'd describe as allergic or not, or as an official sensitivity, but it doesn't agree with them. For instance, mm-hmm. certain foods in some people can cause bloating or cramping or, you know, bowel problems. Some people think they get itchy after certain foods, but it's not a full-blown, mm-hmm. Not full-blown hives or certainly not an
right.
anaphylaxis reaction where, you know, several organs swell and are, possibly endangering your life. What do you think of those more minor reactions? Do you think of them as food allergies or intolerances or something different altogether?
Right. No, I think many of these are what we call food intolerances. We don't believe they're due to a reaction in the immune system, but clearly there are people who can't ingest certain kinds of vegetables or fruits without getting cramping. Now, we know there are some individuals, especially young children, have something called delayed maturation of the fructase enzyme. So this is like lactose that's used to break down sugars in milk. Fructose is one to break down sugars in fruits and certain vegetables. And there are some young children that don't turn that on right away and consequently end up getting fairly severe cramping and diarrhea. And it's likely that there are other kinds of variations in some of this enzyme activity that happens in adults that lead to cramping and, you know, significant discomfort. And I think a lot of adults just figure out they can't eat a certain food and just don't eat it.
Is that something you're studying, or is that like too low level for your research?
Well, it's not too low level because I have a few of my own. But now, right now, I'm focusing on the allergic response. I'd love to be able to, you know, get by that one, have some forms of therapy, and then I'd be very interested to look at many of these others because it is clearly something that does distress a fairly significant portion of the population.
Dr. Sampson, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Dr. Hugh Sampson is the president of the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. He directs the Jaffe Food Allergy Institute at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org.